Hey everyone, it's Mike Kilner here, and welcome to the Indispensable Agent Podcast with your hosts, the Kilner Brothers.
Hey everybody, it's Pat here, and in this podcast, it's really this is where the indispensable get a dose of inspiration to win the game of real estate and outpace market changes. Frankly, this could be also really great for you if you're a small business owner, because that's really what we're doing here.
Yeah, so it's called the Indispensable Agent, but it's really for anyone who wants to be indispensable in their professional life. And so, Pat, why do this podcast now? Why is this important?
Well, I think it's always an important topic from a small business owner standpoint, but the fact of the matter is that the market and the forces within the market are commoditizing the traditional real estate agent faster than the traditional agent is actually equipped to make changes to their skills, to their knowledge, to their mindset, to their business, to stay ahead of the game, to not become a commodity. So what's happening is agents are accidentally becoming commodities. Mm. And that's just something from our seat in running a brokerage and investing into agents is something we can't stand for.
Yeah. So why do you think that we're the guys for this job to talk about?
Well, I don't know. You're the one who wanted to do the podcast, but.
Well, I'd like to get your perspective on it.
Well, in a nutshell, I think on a daily basis, we are in the business of investing ourselves, everything we've got, our entire professional selves into our agents every single day to help them succeed. And that's why we believe in what we're doing here at Tower Hill. That's what we believe is a brokerage's real value to people, is ultimately to make sure not only that they thrive, but that they can thrive today and tomorrow and the next day. It's not just a survival question. You know, how can we make sure that we have enough people hanging around us for another year? But this is a question of survival and thriving long into a very beautiful and illustrious career.
Yeah. And I think that we take a very almost fundamental approach to business rather than focusing on skills that may work right now for market conditions today. We focus on skills and fundamentals that will really help agents be business owners in what is a pretty cloudy future for real estate. Yeah. Right? 5, 10, 15 years down the road, we don't know, but we want the agents that we're helping now to have super successful careers, not just now, but 5, 10, 15 years down the road when no one knows what's going to happen. No one knows what's going to happen to the market. No one knows what's going to happen with other big players getting into the industry. And I think we take a fundamental approach to it.
Yeah, but the fundamentals are not the same fundamentals that were relevant 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. The fundamentals that you need now are an evolution of really great business practices. And so why a podcast? Well, it's the constant revisiting of those fundamental building blocks of business and how they apply now to keep you incredibly relevant to your client base, to people who give you referrals. And in particular in service industries, I mean, service industries across the board have been wildly disrupted in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And frankly, from an agent's perspective, we've been late to the game of getting disrupted. It's been a long time in coming, and now it's hitting us like a ton of bricks. And there's either opportunity in that or there's radical failure. I love the opportunity this type of market actually provides. I'm a big fan of market change because what it does is it allows the cream to rise to the top. It allows great agents to be even better, to innovate. And that's what we're doing. That's kind of the fun of being in business, is the game is a constantly changing landscape. It's on a constantly changing field. And so you have to stay innovative and on the cusp of everything you possibly can using the fundamental skills that you need.
I would agree with everything you just said. And I would also say that to back up for one second, there's the reason why you and I make sense to talk about these topics. It's not because we are tremendously talented or tremendously skilled. There's really
certainly not on this side of the table,
or this side of the table either. But there's certainly I think that we have been in business together for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know how much I've learned from being in business with you, because you were in business in the real estate game for years before that, before I ever started. But I think each one of us, through our experiences in building a sales team, in starting a brokerage, in building a teaching and coaching brand, is that we've collected all these experiences, and we look at everything on two different sides of the same coin.
Absolutely.
You from, if you've read Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman and Mark Winters, you'll understand this terminology, but you're the visionary, the leader. You've always come with the big ideas, and I've always come from the integrator side, which is, okay, how do we take these big ideas and put them into practice and implement them and create systems and efficiencies and profitability out of it? So I think for the people who are listening, we don't have, you know, we're not saying that we're necessarily the gurus in this stuff, but we've failed a lot, we've learned a lot, and we bring tremendously different perspectives that together give people a really good lens in how to work on these fundamentals.
Yeah, absolutely. And can't recommend that book enough, Rocket Fuel, because if you're an entrepreneur and you don't have a counterpart to lead with, one thing you said, Mike, was I'm the leader. I actually think that we're both leading from our seats, and the combination of two leaders leading from their competencies and allowing that to generate ideas actually generates ideas faster and pushes the organization forward faster. We've seen certainly more growth in the last 5 years than we did in the first 10 years when I was solo. And I think that gives credence to this concept that when you have people leading well from their competencies and the right seat on the bus, then you're going to have some explosive growth. And so, yes, it's allowed us to start new businesses, to bring on new talent, to cast a vision and to implement on that on a regular basis. And so that, yes, I would agree that that's, if you're listening to this and you're wondering, well, why these guys, it's not because of us individually, but I do think it is because of us together. And that's why we're doing this together.
Great. So I've actually got two topics for you today. That was a good overview of the podcast and the types of things we want to talk about. You know, why do the podcast in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
But today, in today's episode, I actually have two topics for you. So I'll give you both, and then we'll go back to the first one.
Okay.
So the first is I want to get some of your reaction and some of your insight on the Homebay commercial featuring the illustrious Tony Hawk.
Yeah,
skateboarder extraordinaire.
Initially, until he jumped on a skateboard.
Yeah. He's gotten a little old. He's still
a great skater.
Yeah, but he can still skate. And in the second topic, I think, which is a theme we will come back to constantly in this podcast, is success through failure and learning through failures. And you've got some insights that we've talked about in the past couple of weeks that I really like, and I want to get your thoughts on that.
Awesome. So let's do it. So the Tony Hawk Home Bay commercial.
So I'll set the stage.
Yeah, please. Really quick. Yeah. So you sent me this, and so I had a chance to look at it. But if you haven't seen it, will we be able to post?
Yeah, we can add the link.
Awesome.
It was one of the trending articles on Inman News, the real estate industry sort of news site, and they do a good job of reporting on things that are sort of going viral in the industry, and this commercial is by a company, a brokerage in California called Homebay. And they are really a technology, a mobile app enabled brokerage. And their model is that they have a flat fee and that you'll save lots of money over using a traditional real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the scene, Tony is talking to his friend, another pro skater who I hadn't heard of, but another pro skater who had just ostensibly purchased a house using Homebay. and he's extolling the virtues of using this app and how much he saved. So I'll let you take it from there.
So you want my reaction initially?
I definitely do, because I think it's a direct shot across the bow, and in many ways it's totally expected.
Yeah. Right?
It's 100%.
But there's zero subtlety. And in fact, they show the guy's old real estate agent, you know, sweeping up around the pool because yes. he's now out of a job. So
because Home Bay took the traditional real estate agent out of the job.
Yeah.
Right. So it is exactly the types of things that we're talking about constantly. We intro'd it. The commoditization of the real estate agent is happening without a purposeful practice, you know, to get out of it, to be someone who is actually indispensable.
Sure. So I think there's two reactions that you're going to have. If you're a real estate agent and your heart is beating, you may have two reactions. You may have one of two reactions. You may have both.
Simultaneously,
which is very confusing. The first is, oh my gosh, I can't believe these guys. They're coming into our industry and they think they can provide great service through a mobile app, and I'm indignant. I'm outraged. This is horrible. The industry is going to hell in a handbasket, and I'm not going to stand for it. So I'm going to post nasty things, or I'm just going to sort of stew here and then wonder if I'm going to be in business in a year.
Yeah.
So that's sort of one internal, because all of that may happen all sort of simultaneously.
So number one is indignation.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe this is
right. That,
What nerve, right? And how? What a way to portray a quote traditional real estate agent. So that could be the first one. The second is, that's pretty darn funny. Well done. This has been happening. This is like they've just put together a commercial that is really explicit about the fact that they're taking down the traditional way of looking at real estate. By the way, this is what anybody who's innovating in the marketplace is doing. Get used to it. And fantastic, what great opportunity to separate myself from this type of service. Because it was really interesting. I think some of the talking points that they give is, look, it was this easy. I was just able to easily calculate how much I was going to save. And they went ahead and put a sign in the ground and did paperwork for me and took photos for me. And so interestingly, they name very specifically things that are very administrative in nature.
Right.
And so if your value proposition is administrative in nature to your folks, if your value proposition is a list of things I'm going to do for you, and the majority of those things are administrative, and that's what you're hanging your hat on, then you're going to be out of business pretty soon, because these guys are going to put you out of business. If, however, your value proposition is of a deep fiduciary nature, of a nature of somebody who is absolutely indispensable to the well-being of their client, and you have a great way of explaining your indispensability to them, that is not administrative, it can't be really contained just on a list of things to do, that you have systems, concepts, out of the box realities that you exercise on a regular basis for people to make sure that the opportunity cost of not using you is so much greater than any discount that somebody else can give you, right? That
right.
Redfin can give, that a new site like this can give. If you're in that position, you're looking at this and going, what an amazing opportunity. And this should, I think, ultimately cause you to say, I've got to go back and sharpen the tools that I use to make sure that I'm telling everybody who I encounter about the value that I'm bringing to the table. What's in it for the client? What they're answering is, what's in it for you is you're going to save a lot of money, and we're going to do everything that you think a traditional real estate agent does.
Yes. And interestingly, sort of appealing to the millennial potential home buyer group is, you don't actually need to interface with a human being.
Yeah.
You can do it all through the mobile app, which is sort of an interesting theme. It's not explicit. You know, they're not saying you don't even have to talk to anybody. You don't have to deal with a real estate agent. But in there, they're kind of saying, look, it's so we're separating this out. So you only have to interface through the mobile app, right? So you don't actually have to deal with like someone, you know, who you may not get along with 100% kind of up in your business. You could just do it all almost anonymously through a mobile app. It's a secondary theme.
It's like Carvana for houses sort of idea. Yeah. Just pick it out, you know, do it all from the comfort of your gaming console, basically, right?
Yeah.
You can, you know, on a weekend shop for houses without even actually moving. And then have Uber drive you there when you're ready. And that's where we're going. You know, I heard a stat from a good friend of mine in the business with us on our mastermind call the other day. And it was something like 43% of the buyers this coming year in our metro area will be millennials. That's a big proportion of the population who was not buying 10 years ago.
Right.
They weren't in the market 10 years ago. Now they are.
They're in college.
If you're an agent who is not really, really succinct in telling the people who are considering buying homes about how you're going to be a massive value to them, then these guys are saying our value is greater than the quote traditional agent.
Right.
Another concept that I want to throw out there is get used to not being a traditional real estate agent, because traditional real estate is actually going extinct.
Right.
And that may sound really, really harsh, but the concept of in the consumer's mind, the concept of a traditional real estate agent is that they are obsolete. And as an industry, we've allowed it to happen. It's been like a tidal wave. Those of us who've been in the industry for any period of time building stuff have seen this is just coming down the pike. And get used to the idea of framing yourself as a non-traditional option for people. And here's how it is. And here's what I'm going to bring to the table.
So can you talk about some of the things that might differentiate someone from a traditional real estate agent to
sure.
not end up as the guy sweeping the pool because he's out of a job because of the Homebay app?
Yeah, well, let's first define how the public views the quote traditional real estate agent.
Sure.
So traditional real estate agent is a facilitator of paperwork, transactional details, photos, that sort of stuff. A lot of the stuff that I mentioned before, they're sort of a necessary evil to get the transaction done, right?
In sort of the traditional...
In a quote traditional way, right?
Right.
And so if I can figure out how to do that in a different way and save money, all the better, because that's an antiquated way. That's how my parents used to buy houses. But that's not where we are. By the way, I have access to everything that real estate agent has on their multiple listing service.
As a consumer
now.
Right.
And that is true.
So that's making that when you're just as you delineated it there, sounds pretty appealing.
Totally, totally. And so that's, and if I'm a consumer, by the way, there's a lot of agents who are kind of feeling this way. And so what do? They go, well, I'm going to play a discount game and I'm going to start my own little brokerage out of my basement. And that way I won't have a lot of overhead and I won't have to pay anybody else. And that way I'll be able to give discounts to my friends and family. So at least they will give me their business and I won't lose there as well.
Gotcha.
And they'll say, okay, well, this is a volume play. And I think that's the wrong way to go. You could go that way, but it's a race to the bottom. And by the way, people who are in the tech world will beat you 9 times out of 10 in a race to the bottom.
Yeah, and as you're racing to the bottom, you've undercut your value.
Absolutely,
you have undercut it, and it's hard to recover once you've created that perception in people's minds. It's hard to go back and raise prices, quote unquote.
Absolutely.
You know,
really hard, really, because once you go there, we've had lots of friends who've done this and it's really hard to recoup.
Right.
But it's not impossible, by the way, but it's really tough and it sets you back and it could be the Achilles heel to your profit margins. It oftentimes is that big Achilles heel. Another topic, profit margins for another day.
So what's the counterpoint to differentiation on price? What's the counterpoint to differentiation on discounts?
Yeah, so I would say if you're sitting here and you're going, okay, there's opportunity here, but I'm not exactly sure how I express that better than people who are putting together slick, or, you know, by the way, not a very, very high level video, not crazy slick, but professionally done. But I don't have a professional photographer, a professional videographer. I don't have a new tech idea, but I know that I'm worth everything and more than I'm ever paid. In fact, I'm worth, if I'm charging 3%, I'm worth on average 7%, 9%, 10% on average. And I know that viscerally, I know where I'm saving people money. Opportunity for you is to go back to your last 100 transactions, 50 transactions, and look at those transactions and actually remember where it was that you saved people money, that you were of exponentially larger value than anything that you could have been paid. By the way, that's the definition to my mind of a great professional, right? The attorney who you use to go to court with, because otherwise you're going to go to jail, that man or woman is indispensable to your well-being, right? That's how we should view ourselves. Not as the attorney who, you know, maybe it'd be good if I got a will and I go on the LegalZoom and get a free consult as part of my, you know, my upfront start fee. But the person who's going to make sure your loved ones are taken care of and that your assets are properly distributed, that's indispensable, right? And so you're going to pay that person well, and they're going to be worth much more than you could ever pay them. To my mind, that's what we have to reclaim. So how do you reclaim that? It's in the things that resonate with you. If you believe that you're a fiduciary, we're called to be fiduciaries. We are obliged to be fiduciaries by our local boards and by the National Association of Realtors. But does it actually happen on a regular basis? On a very, very high level. And it's not just putting their needs first. That's a good initial reality. And so you could say, yes, everything I did in this transaction was to put the needs of my client first. That actually could be worth very little to them versus a discount broker. In fact, a discount broker could have their needs prioritized even better than you. So just having that as your standard is not enough to be worth more than you could ever be paid. So where are the areas? Do you have a great system for winning more times than you lose when you submit a contract? What's the opportunity cost of not having you write the contract for folks? What's the opportunity cost of not having you negotiate a home inspection for your sellers or for your buyers? What does that look like? What do you save people versus what they're going to get taken to the mat if they're negotiating for themselves? Right.
Right.
How are you doing that? How are you keeping your cool? How are you going into that and staying the adult in the room when that happens? What's your system for making sure an appraisal never misses value? What's your system for making sure that you're surgically going on the market at the right price so that you generate more offers? And I'm not talking about just bringing the price down low.
Right.
All of your systematic approach to how you do business, to defend value, to add more cash to the bottom line of your folks. Where are those opportunities, and how do you express those things to the consumer in a very systematic, very clear way that makes them go, oh my gosh, if I don't work with Sally or Bob, I'm leaving money, serious money on the table, no matter what I'm getting a discount for. Right. And so really, if you think about it, it means that if you're dealing with a flat fee, let's say $1,000 versus making $20,000 on that, it means you've got to be worth $20,000 plus. And I would say if you're going to make 20 grand, you should be worth 40. And to obsessively go into a transaction going, how can I be worth twice as much as these people are paying me? And if you obsessively look for that at every turn in the road over the course of a 30, 45 day transaction, and by the way, all of the time leading up to prepping a house, all of the time leading up to somebody coming into town to look for that right home, all of those opportunities to help them win in the game of real estate will make you indispensable. Otherwise, you become a commodity like that. So that's what I would say. If you're looking at this and we're
I love it. That's exactly what I was hoping to get out of this was, you know, it's always great to have stuff like this pop up where we can have a discussion about it, because it's so, like you said at the beginning, there are two reactions. There's the indignation, or there's the recognition of the truthfulness of it and the opportunity that lies in something like this. I mean, they're painting the picture in almost, they're doing it, you know, in a very kind of opaque way, you know, very heavy-handed way, painting the picture of what the industry is moving.
Yeah, towards. Very little subtlety. And by the way, why should they be? They have something that they believe is of real value, and good for them. And you know, that's the beauty of a free market reality. And we have a really free market here. So I'm all for companies coming in and saying, hey, there's fat on this bone versus the average person. I believe that most agents actually aren't worth what they're paid. And I'm sure a lot of small businesses aren't worth what they propose they're worth, and they go out of business. And in a free market, that's what happens. There's a lot of agents who've been hanging on for a lot of years who aren't worth what they're paid. And so good. This is what this does for agents who want to become indispensable, is it clears out the marketplace of anybody who wants to be commodity. Either they go to work for a firm where they can just do paperwork or just show houses without any real fiduciary market expertise. Or they say, you know what, I'm going to the other side of this spectrum, and I'm going to make a name for myself as somebody who people can't imagine not doing the transaction with. That's the type of people that we want to coach here internally. Those are the people who we invest ourselves into on a daily basis. And that's sort of the excitement of this type of market. By the way, from a brokerage level, I think there's going to be a lot. Over the next 10 years, we're going to see big, big brokerages that have been doing business for a long, long time in a different paradigm absolutely get clobbered by this. And many of them just either gobbled up or just shuttered the doors. And I look at that as tremendous opportunity from where we're sitting.
Great. So thank you for that, Pat. So the second topic, which let's move on to it.
So failure. Very
briefly. And I think I actually, as we've been thinking about this, I do think that this topic is something that I want to spend more time on next week. Mm-hmm. So if we could just
intro it here.
So the idea of success through failure. And I think there's a book that you've been reading that I think illustrates this point really well. It's something that a lot of people in an entrepreneurial space know viscerally, but this book kind of gives them a rubric to talk about it.
Yeah. So it's the Dilbert Creators book, right?
Yes.
Scott Adams.
So
Scott Adams wrote this really fun book. Scott Adams is the creator of the Dilbert comic, and kind of a zany type of guy. And a lot of fun to listen to. I don't, by the way, buy into all of his worldviews, in particular, just sort of philosophical, religious type stuff. But I really, really like his understanding of the fact that if you want to become excellent, or really to do very well, because the book is called How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. And then sort of in small script, sort of a story of my life, I think is what he says. And so really just, he has this great storyline of his story all the way through and how he lost his voice and how he gained it back and all sorts of crazy stuff has happened to Scott. And he shares it in a, just a hilarious way. So highly recommend the read for adult readers. Probably not something you want to have your
teenagers,
you know, young preteens on down, you know, older kids, you know, who understand how the world works a little bit more, fine. But here's the thing with Scott. He talks about two major things. One is the concept that skills compound on themselves. And probably an overarching concept, actually, definitely an overarching concept in the book, is that what you, in order to go far in life, in order to win big, as the title promotes, you need to focus not on goals so much as to focus, by the way, he'd say goals are for losers, and I'll let you read the book so you understand why, but why to focus less on goals and more on systems that are going to get you to where you want to go. So goals versus systems. In a nutshell, goals are oftentimes set in sort of a vacuum and people work really hard to get to them. And when they achieve them, they don't know what to do next. And when they don't achieve them, they feel like they're a failure. And so there's this issue that he has with setting goals. I would say that that's probably true. I'm a very goal-oriented sort of person, red-blooded American, you know, want to go out and win, and drive forward and set big goals. And even if I fail in trying to attain that goal, okay, no big deal. And I keep moving forward. And I've sort of learned that, but I've seen a lot of folks who won't set big goals. And as a result, you know, kind of stay in complacency, and allow for mediocrity to sink in. So we could talk about goals another time, but what I realized in reading his book is that most of the really big success I've had, if you call it that, has been a result of systems in my life that have caused that to happen. So really, really basic example. I put in place early in my career a system for never, ever losing a lead, because I looked at my books at the end of the year and I looked at just my entire business and I realized, oh my gosh, I had dropped at least $65,000 worth of leads that year. And it made me physically sick. So I said, I'm not going to pay $65,000 again to have to learn that lesson. So I put into my life a system to make sure that that wouldn't happen, because I didn't possess what I needed to in order to never forget about somebody who contacted me or something like that. And by the way, as your business grows, you need systems in order to heighten your natural abilities, take your natural abilities and to grow faster. So I realized, gosh, and I looked at so many other areas of my life, physical, spiritual, athletic, you know, in dealing with relationships, and realized, my gosh, the pattern for me, and I think for most people who've had any degree of success, and that's pretty much everybody, is that the success comes as a result of systematic things in your life, of systems in your life, of people who allow you to execute on systems. You coming into the business allowed me to systematize so much more and allowed for that growth that we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. So systems over goals are going to get you further. So I also like it because it allows you a really, really big picture view of the opportunity of life, versus stating what you want out of life and going and getting it, which is good, and having clarity. We naturally do that. But to have clarity about where you want to go, but also allowing for opportunities to come up that you would have never expected because you have a system in place versus a singular goal in place. On the journey to that goal, maybe there's 10 different opportunities. If you're looking at it systematically, you might be able to take more advantage of those opportunities. So that's a really cool concept. But the one that I really wanted to get to is this idea of skills theory, or he really has, he calls it a hypothesis, because theories are things that are proven through fact. He has a hypothesis based on some of his own personal experience, but I think it's a pretty good one, and one that I think is a really good mental exercise. And you asked me to talk about this in the context of failure. His concept is this, that if you're not where you want to be in a certain area of your life, so take tennis. He actually uses a similar example. Tennis, you have maybe a 1% opportunity of beating your best friend who's played tennis since they were in high school, because they're really good and you're just picking it up. But you could get really lucky and they may turn their ankle or whatever. And so, you know, that maybe you have a 1% chance of getting totally lucky, you know, but 99 times out of 100, he's going to whoop you. So if you want to increase your ability, your possibilities of winning a match of tennis or beating that person in that you know, paradigm, whatever it is, tennis or whatever, go acquire a skill. The skill, and here's his theory, increases your ability to win by 100%. So one percent, okay, acquire a skill. Now you get a 2%. Acquire another skill, 4%. Acquire another skill, 8%, 16, 32, 64. By the time you've acquired, was that six, I think, six or seven skills, now you've tipped the scale in your ability to win against that person, or to, and now you've exponentially grown. Now, he has this great, so that's the skills theory as it applies to a system. Instead of saying, hey, I want to go, I have the goal of going and beating my friend. Great. And so I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to do all these things. He said, have a system to acquire skills, just to be a skill monger on a regular basis. If you apply this to business, right? If we apply this to the question about Tony Hawk video, right?
Right.
If I'm an agent and I want to ensure that I'm never going to become obsolete, that I'm always going to be stay super relevant, I'm going to be indispensable, actually more indispensable today than I will be tomorrow and 10 years from now, in spite of market changes and technology and all sorts of stuff. My job on a daily basis is to go acquire skills and become a true master of my craft. And that cannot be a static reality. That has to be a constant failing forward in the pursuit of gaining skills. And that a really big piece of this is understand that in order to acquire one skill, you probably have to fail 9, 10, 100 times to really acquire that skill. So we deal with brand new agents constantly, and they come in, they don't know how to do a really great market analysis. What's the best way to become great at a market analysis? You cannot sit in a class and just become good at a market analysis. You actually have to fail at putting together a market analysis 20, 40, 100 times before you become really refined and completely indispensable. Otherwise, people will just go onto Zillow and look up the market value. And Zillow is right very infrequently, but they're cooler to look at than you. They're easier. There's an app. None of those things do you have.
Much more instant gratification.
Super instant gratification. You can do it from the comfort of your living room. And so, you know what? Even if it's off by 40%, you know what? It's still good enough. I think they're within 20% about 60% of the time. So by the way, but if you're a brand new agent and you've never analyzed the market, you're no better. You might get lucky and be that good.
Right.
So you have to become indispensable. How do you nail it? How do you become right on the money in terms of your market analysis 99% of the time across the board, right? Nobody's perfect. There's always going to be things you didn't see. There's going to be errors, but how can you get your market analysis to within a percentage point? Well, that's a mastery of craft. That's an understanding of the marketplace. But that comes of really hard, focused work. And it's going to mean that you have to fail at doing it right a lot before you do it. Kids, you know, my kids do this constantly, learning how to ride a bike. I've got boys who are going to states for wrestling. I'm super proud of them. They know that their chances of beating the top guy in their bracket right now is maybe 5%. Great. Guess what we're doing for the next month? We're acquiring skills doggedly every single day, systematically. Then they're failing at those skills until they acquire them. That's the paradigm. Was that what you were looking for?
That's exactly what I was looking for. And I think that there's so much behind that theory. And I want to start off next week on the same topic and
well, I want to know where you failed too. So we can maybe peel the onion off.
I'm perfect. I don't fail at anything. So maybe it's because I don't try hard enough.
I guess. Probably. I don't know.
No, and I think it's actually, we're joking, but it's a good point that, and you mentioned it, there can be a real complacency where you're actually not regularly failing because you're not actually trying. So if you're really trying, if you're actually going out of your way to get better, you will fail.
You should wake up every day and go, how can I fail 100 times so that I can acquire something today?
Yeah. We tend to think of failure as fatal, when failure is a necessary part of the learning process.
Or somehow a reflection on our self-worth. Right. I would say, and that's why people are afraid to throw themselves into business and to life and relationships and you know, because they're afraid of not being enough. Right. And that fear keeps people from throwing themselves into things that, you know, we're finite. We are going to fail. Situations are going to fail us. People are going to fail us. Good. And by the way, your relationship with failure is no different than any other human being's relationship with failure. They're going to fail just as much as you. It just looks like the people who are successful have less failure. And they just fail faster. They just deal with failure differently than the way that most other people do. And that's been a really cool piece of this. You know, I've heard about it and I've written about perseverance and this sort of stuff, but it's been a really great reminder in reading this book. If you take nothing else from this book, those are the things that I would suggest reading it for, if you want to just kind of get into a good mindset there. You know, we've talked about Carol Dweck before on our podcast, and she has this whole concept of a growth mindset. A growth mindset, if you want to have a growth mindset, you have to understand that failure is part of that, and to actually get excited about that. That's the learning process. And as adults, I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to look and act a certain way, to have sort of an avatar of ourselves. We do it online. We put it on Facebook. This avatar of ourselves that we are perfect in every way, right? And that obsession is really unhealthy. And the knowledge that our job is to go out and fail as many times as possible, because we've got a lot of great things to bring to the world. We just have to go find them amidst a lot of failure.
Great. All right. Thank you, Pat. Really good first episode to relaunch the podcast.
Thank you. It's been a blast. Thanks.
Yeah, we're now
reinitiating.
We're reinitiating. We're using the Anchor FM mobile app. There's also a desktop version to produce and syndicate the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was one of the failures of podcasts in previous iterations, was we didn't have, because our operation is so lean right now, as we're building out the Indispensable Agent brand, we didn't necessarily have the technical skills on staff to be using all these different apps and to produce the podcast. So Anchor, actually, if you're thinking about getting into podcasting, is a great way to streamline the process. It's free. You don't have to deal with RSS feeds.
Phenomenal mobile.
So yeah.
Application as well.
Really excited about using it to consistently get these out, to consistently be talking about indispensability for our folks. So until next week, I think next week I want to talk about Carol Dweck. I want to talk about her book Mindset. I want to get back on the failure train,
mm-hmm.
talk about some of my failures. It's awesome. Going to be fun. Great.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.